I am Paul Harris. Dan Strauss and Ian Geiser are here with me. And now Max Foisy joins us for the showbiz segment of the show today. And normally the movie we're going to start talking about today, we would not discuss until after Memorial Day, because that's when these kind of tentpole summer blockbuster movies would open. But here we are on the first weekend of May, and we have the release of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, which qualifies as one of those kind of movies, doesn't it, Max?
Absolutely. It's set in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, so everything they do is just a license to print money.
Yeah. Now, before you get to your review of the movie, which you saw and I did not, because these are not my kind of movies.
Sure.
But you went to the screening, and they had a little bit of a digital problem?
You know, every once in a while, when you try to go see a movie screening, whether you're a regular civilian or a film critic, something happens. And back in the day, it would be the film would break.
Mm-hmm.
I remember going to see the 1989 Tim Burton Batman movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have been about 11 or so. And if you remember that film, right when the Joker is going to get away, they're on the big church tower, and he grabs a hold of the helicopter, and he's being pulled away, and you're thinking, what's going to happen next? The film broke.
Did you get the big burn?
I remember it kind of, in my head, and I don't know if this happened, it actually split. Like watching
no,
the
you would not
split.
Have, you would not
well,
have seen that on there.
Again, I was 11.
At
so
24
this is what
frames
my memory
per second,
says.
There's no way you saw that. However, if the frame got caught in the if the film got caught in the gate,
yeah.
It could have burned from the heat of the projector bulb.
That flipped everybody out. And of course, I didn't see the end of the movie because they didn't have another print ready to go.
Uh-huh.
So I just went home. And
Jenkins,
I remember,
get in here and splice this back together.
I remember going to school and all my friends were like, Batman's great. And I'm like, what happens? I had no idea. So this is not a new thing, but now people don't use film. Everything is digital. And so in order to screen a film, usually you are given a download key.
You mean in the company that is projecting
yes.
The movie theater company.
Exactly. So if you want to play Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, you request, we need a version in 2D, or we need a version in 3D, and we need it for this size screen, and then you enter in your specifications, and they send you back a bunch of numbers and letters like 4, 5, 2, 9, you know, and then they type it in, and there's your movie. That's how these things work. And usually, these keys last for only a certain amount of time, because you can only rent the film for a certain amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
It's very involved. So, we're ready to watch Guardians Volume 2. This is last Tuesday. This is at the Galaxy, one of the biggest screens in town.
Is it an IMAX?
It's not IMAX. The Galaxy screen is a comparable size. It's more lengthwise.
They call it the mega screen.
They do. Yeah.
Yes.
And usually the bigger ones, you know, your James Bond, your Marvel movies, they all play out there.
Yep.
So the theater is packed. There's a lot of little kids there, which always makes me a little bit uncomfortable because all the Marvel movies are PG-13. Because for some reason, Kevin Feige and the Marvel brass want to sneak in a couple of bad curse words. I don't know why. I don't know who you're trying to be edgy
for. Because if they make it just PG, or just G, there's a certain segment of the audience that goes, I don't want to see that.
Yeah.
That's a kid's movie.
I think they can get away from that now because they're already, again, printing money. But
right.
When there are so many little kids going to see Guardians and there's this foul language, it just, the worst offender of that in the Marvel Universe is Iron Man 3. There was some really foul language, a lot of it, and little kids were there. I don't know. But anyway, I'm digressing. Bunch of kids there, a bunch of families, people are stoked, people are ready to go. And right on the nose at 7 o'clock, the movie begins. No previews, no trailers. It's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Marvel title flips. You see all these different characters. You see Captain America. You see Black Panther. And it just freezes. Like a needle scratch. Just freezes. And so everybody goes, oh, blah, 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 blah. That was okay. These things happen, you know. Then they restart it. It freezes again.
And it takes a few minutes before they can restart, right?
About 4 separate times with maybe about a 2 or 3 minute reset, it kept freezing. Finally, the rep came out from Allied and said, you know, well, it's his fault. He's trying to calm everybody down. We have to get a new key. Apparently, they sent us 2D, and everybody in the audience is wearing glasses for 3D, and that's what they want to show us. So you already have hecklers in the audience going, just show us 2D. Well, I'm sure that Marvel has a deal, and they want you to see it in 3D because it's a screening. It's a, you know, preview.
Yep.
So they have to wait. So they have to get a new key. So they have to petition the studio or do whatever they do. So we're waiting. They're like, it'll be 15 minutes. We'll get a new key. Don't worry about it. 15 minutes goes by. Lights go back down. Here comes the Marvel screen. Everyone's like, all right, Guardians. This is going to be great. There's Captain America. There's Black Panther. Freeze.
Oh!
And when it starts again, the frame is all out of sorts. It's the wrong size digital print. And you can't see people's heads, and it's just, you don't know. So it freezes again. So he comes back out and says, okay, we have to, I'm sorry, you know, it's not my fault. You know, everybody starts getting antsy. By this time, it's almost 8 o'clock. Like a good half an hour, 45 minutes have gone by. Parents are starting to take their kids out of the theater because it's going to be past their bedtime and people have somewhat of a long drive. So I didn't have anywhere to be. And I was like, I'm going to watch this movie. You know, I have to review it on the Paul Harris Showbiz Show, so I'm going to stick with this. And something else kind of interesting. As you know, Paul, you and I, when we go to the things, we know most everybody in the audience because we've worked in media and we go to all these screenings. So I decide I'm going to make the most of this. I'm going to go say hi to my pals that I don't normally see. So I get up and I'm a bit of a spectacle of myself maybe. And I'm walking around from aisle to aisle. Hey, Ian, how's it going? Hey, Dan. Hey, Paul, what's going on today? Boy, crazy movie, huh? And I just start by everybody else is on their phone, just staring straight down. Married couple. Families, everybody's staring straight. It was like a scene from The Circle. Everybody was just staring at their phone the whole time. And I thought the only reason why the whole theater hasn't cleared out is because people have their smartphones to entertain them. So finally, the guy comes back in. It's after 8 o'clock at this point. And he says, we actually have the theater booked all night. There's no other screening coming up. No matter how long this takes, if it's 10 p.m., we're going to screen the movie for you. Don't worry about it. This actually makes people leave. Because they thought maybe there was a time limit, the cutoff is 8:30, but a lot of the theater left. So I stuck with it, and I want to say, and somebody can text me or tweet me and correct me, but I want to say it was 8:30-ish, about an hour and a half after it was supposed to begin. Then the movie begins.
Okay, before you get to anything else, did other reviewers leave?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so now we learn who in this industry is dedicated to their profession.
Well, I will say, without naming names, Tom O'Keefe, who is a great guy. He reviews on the John Carney Show, and I heard him reviewing Guardians, and I thought to myself, how did you see this, Tom? But he actually went on to explain he had to get his kids home because of bedtime and school night and everything.
Yeah.
And he paid and went back to see it. So I could have done that too. I could have gone home, but I was solo. I didn't have my kid with me, so I was able to stay. But yeah, Tom did go above and beyond and actually paid to see a movie.
Okay.
Before I get to the review, though, I will just say one more thing. When you delay a movie an hour and a half, which is the running time of a lot of other movies, and it's a Marvel film, and a lot of these comic book films are long anyway. This movie has 5 post-credit sequences. People were getting a little uncomfortable, and it had nothing to do with the movie. And I think it might have hurt some people's reaction to the film because they thought, oh, this is so long. It wasn't. It just started an hour and a half.
The evening was long. The movie was not.
Exactly.
Okay. So now, if I have not seen Guardians of the Galaxy, which I have not... Would I understand what's going on in Guardians of the Galaxy 2?
Oh, sure. Yeah, these Guardians movies have nothing to do with anything. They are light as a feather space comedies. So you'd be totally fine. You are the target audience.
All right, so tell me about it.
I have to let my personal feelings show before I review the movie. I'm going to be a stick in the mud. I don't like these movies. I don't like the Guardians of the Galaxy movies. Okay. I think I was the only person in the galaxy who didn't like that first movie.
Okay.
This is definitely a comic book franchise that plays to the non-fans, which is fine. That's totally great. But I live and breathe in the comic book universe, and so when one of these movies comes out, I have an expectation for connectivity and for references and what have you, and stakes getting higher. I mean, this was when the first one came out, the 9th or 10th movie in this MCU. So you're telling me I have to watch all these movies, and then you give me a movie that doesn't even need to be there? Like, I was so frustrated with that first movie. And when I left, I thought, boy, people are really going to dislike this film. I was wrong. It made all the money in the world, and people who just wanted to laugh at a talking raccoon and a giant tree with a machine gun, they got what they wanted, and people love these movies.
Okay. That's me, because I'm not a big comic book fan, so I love the first one.
Wow, so maybe which I would like it too.
Yes, I would say I would give it a try.
And again, this is not to slam anybody. I think this is a movie that plays for non-comic book people, and that's why it made so much money. It's very smart of Marvel to do it.
Did you ever see it?
Yeah, I did. I saw the first one, and it was okay for me. The biggest thing that I liked was he kept putting a cassette tape in, and the music.
The soundtrack was great.
The soundtrack is really good. You'd probably like the soundtrack.
It's a 1970s soundtrack, and to me, I just think that that's so easy. It's very Suicide Squad, and the way the Suicide Squad's like, look, we're going to put on a song that everybody knows, and everybody goes, look, it's Queen. Well, in this volume two of Guardians, they play Fleetwood Mac's The Chain a couple of times, and people around me are like, yeah, Fleetwood Mac. And I just, it's so
okay.
Easy.
You know what? This is weirdly coincidental, because a half hour ago, I was talking to Neil deGrasse Tyson, and I was telling him that I have been going into space since the 1970s because I'm in the broadcast media, and the signal from the radio transmitters go up into space, and they keep going. And so I said, you know, there are, for instance, any planet that's 47 light years away from us would be able to know what was going on here in the early, since 1970.
Wow.
So now you're talking about exactly that. So maybe that's why they put this stuff in the movie, because 1970 music is finally getting to that part of space.
They put it in the movie because it hits a nostalgic sweet spot for the audience. But, that's all. And I find that sort of predictable and cloying.
What interesting to me about that is that's our demographic, me and Dan. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's not your demographic, 1970s music.
And the people who love this franchise are older, non-comic book fans. I mean, James Gunn is a guy that I root for. He's a director who everybody in St. Louis knows is from St. Louis. His brother Sean Gunn was in Gilmore Girls, and James Gunn has made some great movies like Tromeo and Juliet. He made a movie called Slither with Elizabeth Banks, and I had him on the movie show back when Slither came out, and we probably spent a half an hour just talking about emos and what have you. Great, great guy. And when he got a Marvel film based on a book that nobody read, Guardians. It's a very, it's an obscure book. But he was able to make it weird. And something that the sequel did do, which I did not expect, was it made me appreciate how strange that first movie was and how many chances it took. This one plays to the audience. It super serves the audience. Unlike the better sequels out there, like An Empire Strikes Back, which takes characters you're familiar with and kind of turns them on their ear or raises stakes. This one just says, you like the Talking Raccoon? Here's more Talking Raccoon. You like the 70s music? Here's some more 70s music. We call this Awesome Mix Volume 2. You like that giant tree? Now he's a baby tree. It's cute. Give us money. And I just think that it's...
You're not cynical about this at all.
Yeah. Well, and you know, that's why this review, it's, you know, I am falling on my sword and saying that I'm a stick in the mud. Everybody loved that first movie. Everybody in the screening who stayed loved the second one. It's a crowd-pleasing favorite. But, you know, you mentioned at the outset of this conversation that you're not a comic book guy. That's what the Guardians movies are for. It's for people who go, look, a talking raccoon, that's awesome. Here's my $5. People like me who actually, I know it sounds crazy, but I'm like, what's going to happen in Thor Ragnarok when it comes out in November? Can't wait to see the Hulk and Thor fight. That's a big deal to me. So with Guardians, I don't care. I'm like, get on with it. Who are these people? I don't care. Plus, okay, we're really going to go deep here. I don't like these characters. What I didn't like about that first Guardians is that Chris Pratt's character, Star-Lord, he's not a rapscallion. He's a jerk. He's a jerk who has no character arc. He treats women horribly. He's just a jerk to everybody. And you're supposed to like him because he's a lovable rapscallion. No, he's a bad person. And I don't like Drax. I don't like Gamora. I don't like these characters. So when they come back in the sequel and they're still their horrible selves, you know, they're not anti-hero. I don't know what they're trying to do with this. You know, I don't know if they're just trying to be the anti-Avengers, because that's the thing, again, about this universe. When the Avengers got together, it was exciting for people because they like Captain America. They like hanging out with Iron Man. We like those characters. So with me, I just didn't connect to the humor or the nostalgia or anything in this movie. I was alone, though, and most everybody, I mean, Tom's review earlier today, he loved it.
Okay.
So, you know.
So let me ask you for two numbers then. One, your rating of this on a scale of 0 to 10.
Okay.
And the other, what you think it'll do in the box office this weekend, because I'm looking at a report here that while you've been dissing this movie, it's made $14 billion.
Yes. No, I know. And once again, I want to say I'm rooting for James Gunn. I'm so happy that he has this franchise. There's obviously going to be another Guardians movie. I've seen some reports thinking it's going to be a bigger box office smash than Beauty and the Beast. I'm not sure that's possible because, you know, Beauty and the Beast had 25 years of nostalgia wrapped up in it, and this one just doesn't. It's a kind of a newer thing. It'll obviously do huge, though. It'll be number one this weekend.
Okay.
Course.
And your rating?
I'll give Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 a 2.
Wow.
That's Max's rating.
Really, no. I really don't like, I don't like these movies.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to tell you right now, Dan's rating, and he hasn't even seen the movie yet, 10.
Yeah.
No, he said he only thought the first one was okay. Yeah. That's surprising to me.
Yeah, the first one to me was maybe a 5.
So did the first one entertain you enough to make you interested and wanted to go see the second one?
Yeah, I thought about I would probably go see the second one. The first one, I'm with Max, though. The guy was a jerk. He was kind of a jerk, and he was hard. It was hard to wrap your... You know, wrap your arms around the guy and go, oh, man, he's a lovable jerk. He was kind of an...
Lovable jerks are great. Yeah. And cinema is full of lovable jerks that we like to root for. I mean, you know, Kurt Russell has made a career out of playing lovable jerks. In Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, they make him Chris Pratt's dad. That's great casting. It doesn't make you like Chris Pratt's character anymore. You just say to yourself, look, Kurt Russell.
I don't even know what this means, but I read this morning, I think it was trending on Facebook, Kurt Russell de-aging. Did they do something in the movie to make him look like a younger Kurt Russell?
Yeah, they've done this in a lot of the Marvel films recently. They love this technology. In Iron Man 3, you had a younger Robert Downey Jr. In Ant-Man, at the opening, you had a younger Michael Douglas. It's easy for Marvel to do this because there exists visions of these actors on film already.
Yeah.
So Kurt Russell, they took some of his facial features from around, I would say, like The Thing, maybe. He's got the wavy hair, and it's an opening scene where he's driving in a Corvette. What they said was they actually filmed it with Kurt with some makeup and then put CGI on top of it. It looks flawless. It's really incredible that they can do that.
That is weird. It's something that just made the hair on the back of my neck stand up.
You know what? This is all Disney, of course. Marvel's under the Disney banner, and look what Disney did with Rogue One. I don't know if you saw Rogue One with Peter Cushing and Carrie Fisher. The de-aging there was sort of approached the Uncanny Valley. But Disney's not going to stop doing this. They're going to keep de-aging everybody. You and I, hopefully, one day will be de-aged.
It's too bad we can't have some sort of screen that's in front of us, an invisible screen that de-ages us when we walk down.
Just you wait.
Yeah. Yeah.
If I were de-aged, instead of having this marvelously wonderful, deep voice that I have right now, you'd hear me in my early DJ voice.
Oh, yeah.
I'd be way up here.
Yeah. Because
that's what I sounded like when I was doing Top 40 radio all those years ago. And the music just keeps on coming.
Here's Madonna.
Oh, it was before Madonna. Oh. It was Fleetwood Mac.
Oh.
All right, let's take a break here. When we come back, Richard Gere has two movies opening today. Now, the last time I can remember anybody having two movies out at the same time is when Amy Adams had the wonderful movie The Arrival and the worst movie of the year, Nocturnal Animals.
It's a bad movie.
Now, I'll tell you about the two Richard Gere movies that are opening up today when we come back as we continue with the showbiz stuff here on the Big 550 KTRS. As we continue along here talking showbiz stuff, Max just gave a 2 on a scale of 10 to Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. That will probably keep that movie from being a success.
No. And,
but he prefaced it by saying he's biased. So it's a review that
he's not a fan of that.
Yes. You know, I think if you were like me and you didn't really enjoy that first one, like Dan was sort of lukewarm, then maybe don't waste your time with the second one. You know?
Okay.
It'll still make all the money in the world, and I'm happy that it's a success, and yay for James Gunn. It's just, I wish it would have been more up my alley.
All right. The other two movies that we have this week that I'm going to review are both movies that star Richard Gere. Richard Gere has made a career out of playing classy, good-looking guys. That's who Richard Gere is when you think of him. I mean, the last hit he was in was the Best Exotic Marigold Hotel Part 2.
Welcome to my world.
The classy, handsome guy.
Oh, yeah.
The kind of guy when you come on the screen, the women just melt.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You and Gere do have that in common.
What a career, though. I mean, Chicago and I mean all this. He was a giant guy for a while.
All the way back to Officer and a Gentleman. Yeah. And
American Gigolo.
Pretty Woman.
Yeah. Well, now he's in a movie called Norman. He plays the title character. And he is cast against type. He plays Norman Oppenheimer, a schlubby Jewish guy in his 60s with a Woody Allen accent whose entire life revolves around making business connections. In fact, I mentioned Woody Allen because Norman is a little bit like Woody Allen's character, Broadway Danny Rose. I kept waiting for him to say, may I just inject one statement at this juncture? He's that kind of guy. He introduces this person to that person. He gets a little commission on those business deals that he puts together. He knows all sorts of people, but he has to hustle every day to find more of them. He's the kind of guy who doesn't have an office. His office is wherever he is. He has his cell phone with him. It's plugged in. He's got his earbuds in. He talks on that little white microphone hanging from the earbuds. And if he is outside and it's too noisy, he'll duck into a store or a restaurant and just conduct his business on the phone there. He's constantly on the move. He's constantly trying to make things happen. He is both grating and ingratiating at the same time, and he squeezes himself into other people's business. So that's the character. Now, the movie starts off with him trying to get into a meeting with a big energy executive. He's got some sort of deal he wants to put together with this guy, but he can't reach him. He can't get through the outer layer of people who are essentially paid to keep people like Norman away from a big energy executive. But Norman goes to this energy symposium, and he sees Eshel, who is a representative of the Israeli government. And Norman is impressed by him and thinks to himself, oh, if I could use him to get to the energy executive, oh, that could be my way in here. So Norman follows Eshel down the street until he stops in front of a fancy clothing store, and Norman strikes up a conversation, ends up buying him a very, very, very expensive pair of shoes, and convinces Eshel to go to a dinner party that night at the energy executive's home. But after they part, Eshel's advisors say, we don't know who this guy is. We don't know what his motives are. You can't go anywhere with this guy. Stay away from him. So Eshel doesn't go to the dinner, but Richard Gere does go, and he's telling the host, the energy executive, who's played by Josh Charles, oh, I'm here with Eshel, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, they're looking forward to having Eshel there, but he never shows up. And then they realize that Richard Gere is just one of those annoying guys, and Josh Charles kicks him out of the house. Okay, then the movie jumps forward 3 years, and Eshel has now worked his way through Israeli politics to become the prime minister of Israel. And on a visit to New York, he spots Norman. And to his advisor's horror, he hugs him and tells everybody about his close friend Norman and says, Norman, you're going to be my connection in the United States. You're going to be my advisor here. Well, now Norman, who was just this schlubby guy trying to get through day to day, now he's got connections. Now he's got credentials. And now everybody who shunned him wants something from him, including his nephew, who's played by Michael Sheen, and his rabbi, who's played by Steve Buscemi. Yes, I said his rabbi, who's played by Steve Buscemi, and his nephew is played by the Englishman, Michael Sheen. These are all Jewish characters, by the way. There are other supporting characters played by Hank Azaria and Harris Yulin, who is one of those character actors that when you see him, you'll recognize him, but you'll never remember his name. And in this movie, he plays the same supporting character he plays in every other movie in Harris Yulin's entire career. But that's fine.
This one, somebody says, we need a Harris Yulin type.
Yeah.
Let's get Harris Yulin.
He's still alive. Get him in here. Norman also draws the attention of a woman who is an Israeli secret agent. She uncovers some things about his connection to Eshel that creates problems for them. I don't want to give away too much of the plot here. And there really is too much of the plot. It sounds like it's intriguing, but it isn't. And the director, Joseph Seder, loses the pace of this movie halfway through. And for some reason, he uses a score that sounds like it was lifted from Curb Your Enthusiasm. This character could easily have been played by Larry David.
Wow.
So then I'm wondering, with that music going on, is this supposed to be a satire, or is this supposed to be a straight drama?
Yeah, are you laughing in Norman?
No. So as a satire, it fails, and as a straight drama, it fails. I give Richard Gere credit for doing smaller movies like this and the other one I'm going to mention in a moment here, and also playing a part he would not seem right for, because if you said, who can we get to play this typical New York Jew, you would not think, get me a Gentile guy like Richard Gere. But he pulls it off. His hair is right. The accent is right. The shoulders slumped over. It's all good. It's not the fact that these lead characters are not played by Jewish guys is not as bad in this movie as it was in The Comedian, the worst movie of this year, with Robert De Niro and Danny DeVito playing old Jews.
I love that, how you hate that movie.
Yeah, I'm going to keep mentioning it.
I know, I love it.
Did you like it?
I didn't see it.
Oh,
so don't. I probably will. Oh, I probably will before
don't
the end of the
waste
year.
Your time. And by the way, don't waste your time with Norman either. Even though Gere does pull it off in this, the rest of the movie just isn't worth your time. I give it a 3 out of 10. and that's one of this week's Richard Gere movies. The other one is called The Dinner,
which has a great trailer. I watched the trailer, and it does everything a trailer should do, which is hint at what's happening without really telling you, make you really intrigued. And when the trailer was over, I thought to myself, I want to see this movie.
And it has four actors who I think are absolutely terrific on screen. Richard Gere plays a congressman who's running for governor. Steve Coogan is his jealous brother, who's a failed teacher with mental issues. Laura Linney and Rebecca Hall are their wives. Every time I see Laura Linney on screen, I think to myself, you know, people talk about Meryl Streep being the greatest actress of her generation. I think Laura Linney, who's probably about 15 years younger, may be the greatest actress of her generation.
And it's a reunion from Primal Fear.
Right.
She was in that with Richard Gere.
That's correct. So this foursome goes to dinner at one of those restaurants that none of us would ever go to. It is one of those restaurants that is way fancier than it needs to be. The kind of restaurant where the maitre d' comes over, when you order your dishes, each person's dish is brought out by an individual waiter or waitress. You know, the kind with the napkin or towel wrapped over their left arm, and they're holding right. The plate from the bottom in their right hand, and they put it down in front of you, and then the maitre d' comes over and tells you, all right, well, now you're going to have the duck confit, which is made with this, and a little tarragon butter, and all that sort of stuff that none of us would care about.
Don't ask for extra ketchup, because they have to go hire somebody to bring out the one cup of ketchup for it.
Oh, it's going to be organic ketchup right. That has been personally made by the ketchup chef in the back. Every detail of every dish has to be explained by this maitre d'. So, for that reason, I was not into this movie at all. There have been great food movies. In fact, Steve Coogan's movie, The Trip, is a great food movie. Big Night, with Tony Shalhoub and now I'm blanking on the guy.
He's great. Stanley Tucci.
Yeah, Stanley Tucci, Tony Shalhoub, and Allison Janney. Big Night from 20-plus years ago.
The Dinner, is this a food movie? Because the trailer made it look like there was some sort of congressional underlying, like things with kids and all kinds of nefarious things going on.
Well, that's what I'm
going
to get to. Okay. But this all takes place surrounded by this overwhelmingly expensive and over-detailed meal. Meanwhile,
you hated this meal.
Meanwhile,
yeah.
The two couples are meeting. The reason they went to this dinner is to discuss what to do about their sons, who together have committed a horrible murder of a homeless person in an ATM vestibule. And the question is, are they going to cover it up, or are they going to tell the authorities? And we see flashbacks to what these boys actually did, and we see flashbacks of how these rich, privileged people lived their rich, privileged lives before all of this. The problem is, there is no one to root for in the dinner, except for the homeless victim. Neither the adults nor their sons are anybody I would want to spend even 5 minutes with, let alone over a three-hour dinner. And the whole thing seems staged, more like a play than a movie. The director did put a few conversations outside of the restaurant just to open it up a little bit, but even that is stagey. And the whole thing is way too slow, and the score is overwrought, and it's distracting. The Dinner is an American remake of an Italian movie from a few years ago that was based on a novel, and it's written and directed by an Israeli named Oren Moverman. I give him credit for 3 years ago writing the Brian Wilson movie, Love and Mercy.
Oh, wow.
But he also produced Norman, the other Richard Gere movie that opened up this week. This guy's 0 for 2 this week, as far as I'm concerned.
Richard Gere loves him.
Apparently. I am a fan of all four of the principal actors in The Dinner, but nothing else. And so I'm giving this a 2. I'm giving them a half a point for each of the actors.
Wow.
Yeah. It is just...
So Norman, you're even recommending Norman over The Dinner.
Yes, and Norman is not a good movie, and it's better than The Dinner.
Norman got a higher score on today's show than Guardians of the Galaxy.
Wow.
2.
That's right.
And it's not a good movie.
Here's the amazing thing. We reviewed 3 movies today. Together, combined, they have a 7.
Wow. No.
A 2, and a 3. Yeah. 7 for our movies today.
Wow.
So now The Dinner and Norman.
I like how Dan's like, is that 7?
Wait a minute. Hold on a second.
Want to take a shoe off?
No, they're working on the sequel for The Dinner.
Yeah.
Dessert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There is a dessert in this, of course, and it's got some sort of
And then the prequel is brunch.
So the story goes about Richard Gere. You were giving him kudos for doing these smaller, more character driven work and not the big blockbusters.
Yes.
The story goes with him that after he did that movie Red Corner, which had the villains were Chinese people, that China and distributors and money people in China said, we're never going to show a Richard Gere movie again.
Oh.
And Hollywood, of course, loves to appeal to China right now because it's the second largest box office market. And so the bigger producers say, you know what, maybe cast a Paul Harris instead of a Richard Gere. And that's why he's had to do these smaller films. There's this whole article about it, I think in Vanity Fair a couple of days ago. And he said, look, I've made my money. I did the big blockbusters. After Chicago, especially, was a huge spectacle, you know, best picture. He said, I'm fine doing the smaller things, but it's a political reason why he's doing these smaller movies.
Why does China hate him?
Because of the movie he made called Red Corner.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And by the way, let me just say to the Chinese, if you look at my film highlight reel, which is all 2.5 minutes of my scene in Mississippi Grind, I'm available for the Richard Gere roles.
Yeah, you've done nothing against China.
And you know what? When I look at him, like Dan, when I look at myself in the mirror, I see a Richard Gere. That's what I see. Now, when I put my glasses on, that changes. That's all the time we have for the showbiz stuff this week. That's Max. That's Ian. That's Dan. I'm Paul. This is the Big 550 KTRS.